Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our MLBPipeline.com minor league experts, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Guys, great to have you with me. Very excited to be working with both of you. Let's start with the latest draft buzz. Jonathan, who's making noise and who's not making noise?
Well, I think the guy I want to start talking about, Ed, is Dylan Tate from Santa Barbara out in California. He was a guy who probably more than anybody in the draft class had done more to separate himself in terms of how he's performed. We ran him all the way up to number two on our top 100 when we put that out recently. And right as we were doing that, he missed a start. And this has been a weird year where there have just been so many injuries. So I think everybody kind of was holding their breath. It was termed a minor trapezoid muscle injury suffered in the weight room. Unfortunately, what happens sometimes in college programs is that what starts out as a trapezoid or a hamstring suddenly becomes an elbow injury by the end of the year because they're trying to hide things. But it does seem that in this case, the alarm bells were not necessarily needed. He came back, pitched at the University of Hawaii the week before last and threw really well, was up to 96, and then took the ball again on Friday, this past Friday against UC Davis, and won that game and went eight innings, striking out seven. So it sounds like he's just fine. I think it was telling that, he missed a start, but they didn't try to tuck him into a Sunday or a midweek start or something crazy like that where they were trying to work him back. He just took the ball again on Friday like he has, and he's answered a lot of questions about whether or not he can start. He's going to go really high in the draft, and whoever takes him will be pretty sure that he's going to fit into a rotation.
Jim, what about from you? Who's making noise on your end?
Well, the guy who seems to keep rising up charts, he's having a tremendous year, and his team's having a tremendous year, is Tyler Jay, a left-handed pitcher out of Illinois who was 19th on our draft top 100 when we released that about a week ago. And we keep hearing, I think he is probably going to be the first left-handed pitcher drafted. I think he's pretty close to locking that up. And I keep hearing top 15, top 10. I had a scout tell me last night that he thinks even the Diamondbacks with the number one pick have kicked the tires on him a little bit, which would surprise me. But, interesting story.
Well, hold on.
Why
would it surprise you?
Well, because, he's a 6'1". Pitcher who's pitched mostly in relief in college baseball. So it's usually when you have a pitcher goes, and I don't think he'd go 1-1, but usually when you have a pitcher who'd even go in the top 10, you're thinking starter. And that's kind of the interesting thing about Tyler Jay's. If you look at the size and you look at the resume, where he's, I think, made one start in 3 years at Illinois, okay, you're thinking reliever, but he does have multiple pitches. He can touch 98 and work 93, 95 with his fastball. That would probably tick down, obviously, if he was a starter. But he's got a very good slider, solid curveball, even mixes in the changeup, throws strikes. Not a guy who throws with a lot of effort. He's very athletic, so he does it with athleticism and not trying to overpower his mechanics. So you'd think he has a chance to start. You just don't know. And he's having an unbelievable year. 0.73 ERA. I think that's second in NCAA Division I last time I checked. 54 strikeouts, 4 walks, and 49 innings. And Illinois has won 21 games in a row and is 40-6, having an unbelievable year. And this could be an Illinois team that it's good enough to go to the College World Series. And, like I said, it'd be easy to pigeonhole Tyler Jay as a reliever because that's what he's done, and he's not a big guy. But I do think whoever drafts him, you're going to have that quandary. Do you want to try to develop him as a starter, which, you could work out? Or do you want to get this guy to the big leagues very, very quickly as a reliever? And it's not just a situational guy. It's a potential closer. So it'll be interesting to see how high he goes in the draft and what the team that picks him decides to do with him after they select him.
So many guys, top guys, great prospects, are getting called up. Have you, in your experience, either of you, John or Jim, seen anything like this before? John?
I'm hard-pressed to think of a time where you saw – first of all, Chris Bryant and Addison Russell from the same team getting called up, let alone some of the Archie Bradley breaking camp, with the Diamondbacks along with Jock Peterson. Obviously, the Blue Jays have made a lot of moves, but they started out with a ton of guys up. Blake Swihart just got called up. Austin Hedges just got called up. I think the only thing I can think of, and it's not the same in terms of quantity, but when Mike Trout came back up and Bryce Harper came up at around the same time, was probably the only time I can think of where there was this much buzz about guys being called up from the minors.
Yeah, and Matt Moore was part of that, came up at the same time as those guys, too. And, I do think it's kind of a product. I think it was an unusual year to start the year in that, Johnson mentioned the Blue Jays seemed to call up every one of their prospects at the start of the season, and Archie Bradley did make the Diamondbacks. It was unusual in that I believe the first 12 prospects on the Pipeline Top 100 Prospects list started the year in the minors, which I don't remember that ever happening. And obviously some of that was, you could argue was artificial because a lot of people thought Chris Bryant should have been on the Cubs opening day roster. Swihart's come up because of an injury. Carlos Rodon's another guy who's come up.
Right.
But, he had a chance to make the team out of spring training even though he was drafted last year. So I think we've had call-ups in the news because we had fewer top prospects on opening day rosters than we normally have, too. So it's been kind of a reflection of that. And, Addison Russell was a need-based, call-up by the Cubs. I don't think it was in the plan to call him up when they did, but they had the worst second base production in baseball. Javier Baez was on the bereavement list to AAA Iowa, and so they turned to Addison Russell. The Cubs are contending this year. So I think it's been kind of a product of that. The Red Sox are trying to contend this year, and they've lost the two guys they thought were going to be their catchers this year, or at least at the start of the year, in Vasquez and Hannigan, and so they turned to Blake Swihart. So, it'll be interesting. I don't know who we'll have to see who the next guy getting called up will be.
Yeah, I think it's one thing that's interesting to note is, with all of the hullabaloo around when Bryant was going to get called up, we've not heard a whole lot about the Super 2 thing. Now, some of it was need, as you pointed out, injuries and lack of production. But at least with the guys breaking camp and guys getting called up, even in Chris Bryant's case, people aren't waiting until June to get past that Super 2 status, which is something that, was talked about a lot over the last couple of years.
And I think, Johnson, I guess my sense is, obviously free agency, you're talking about losing a player potentially a year, sooner than you have to if you wait a little bit and call them like the Cubs did with Bryant. And while the Super 2 guys can get expensive, at least in the Cubs' case, they're keeping Chris Bryant for 7 years instead of six. And I do feel that if you're a contender, or you're planning on contending, that's maybe less of a consideration. And there's also the possibility, too, that when we see the next CBA, that the Super 2, the line of demarcation for who's a Super 2 and who isn't moves some more, too. So it's possible you could wait to call a guy up this year, but, if the Super 2 rule, changes in the next CBA, that by the time that guy's ready for arbitration, you thought you were holding off his arbitration for a year and you didn't. So I don't know if teams are looking at it as maybe not worrying as much about the Super 2 because it could change on them. It's out of their control. You could delay a guy and feel like you're keeping arbitration at bay for a year, and then finding out, well, in the next CBA they've moved it on us and we are going to arbitration anyway on the guy.
Great insights from both of you. Right now, we're very happy to introduce to the MLBPipeline.com podcast one of the great stars in the pipeline, not for much longer, and we welcome to the broadcast Francisco Lindor of the Cleveland Indians, drafted in the first round in 2011 by the Indians. Francisco, great to have you. I just want to first ask this. I've been around the game for a while, and invariably when I talk to players and say, did you expect to be drafted by the team that drafted you, 90 to 95% of the guys say, no, I never thought it was going to be the team that selected me. Was that the case with you and the Cleveland Indians?
No. First of all, thank you for having me first. And good morning to everyone that's listening, you guys. And no, I didn't think I was going to get picked by the Indians. But they called and they picked me. I saw my name on the TV, and that's when everybody went crazy in the room.
Who did you think was going to have the chance to pick you?
I mean, I talked a lot to Seattle. I talked a lot to Kansas City. And Those two were the two guys, the two teams that I thought they were going to pick me. I had on my mind that it was one of those two. And they called when the draft started, and they said they were going to head different directions. So that's when you know, me being so young, being naive, and going through this for the first time, you know, I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to get picked then. You know, but they even talked to my agent, and he mentioned something, but I didn't think it was gonna happen with the Indians. I thought another team was gonna pick me later on, and somehow my name on the TV, I heard from Bob Philly, and you know, everybody went crazy. I went crazy. I was happy. I was happy, and got no regrets.
Let me just ask you this: what goes through your mind when people refer to you as the second coming of Elvis Andrus?
I mean, it's an honor. It's an honor being mentioned next to a guy like that. It's just an opportunity that I want to take advantage of it. My whole career, you know, I want to be the best at what I do. I want to continue to strive to be in the big leagues and help the Indians win.
All right, speaking of that, Francisco, I know that you know you're probably carrying around like the red bat phone with you wherever you go. Waiting for that call. How difficult is it for you to just go and do what you need to do? You know, when we've spoken, you've always said that you know you have things that you can still work on. But knowing that you're that phone call away, and you see some of these other guys, you know, Bryant and Russell, and the other guys are getting called up and getting their big league started. How hard is it for you to find that balance to getting your work done and you know, biding your time while also really anticipating that call?
I'm super excited for them. They, you know, they put in the work, they put in the time, and it's paying off for them. And that makes me realize, you know, that I can be there too. That's gonna be me one day. You know, I continue to strive to be the best, to work, to do everything within my power to be there. And, you know, I'm human, of course. I think a lot. I'm not thinking about it 24/7 because I don't. I really don't. It comes into my mind and goes away quick, you know. What's been helping me is maturity. The way I feel like I'm a mature person, and that's helping me to, you know, that's just another step in my life. I can't be thinking about the future. I got to be thinking about the present. I got to be not the past, not the future. I got to be in the present. I got to live on the present, and I continue to go in my clubhouse and try to be the best teammate, try to be the best person I can be on and off the field, and try to be the best baseball player.
Francisco, you've moved very quick for your age. You got to AAA at the end of last season. How much did that help you for coming to AAA this year? Was it a little bit easier already having been at that level as AAA? And I know it's early. Have you noticed any difference this year? Are you more comfortable at the AAA level than you were at the end of last season? How has that transition been going?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's big whenever you show up to a clubhouse and it's the same clubhouse you're familiar with that clubhouse. They want the not most difficult things, but one of the most challenging things for minor leaguers is whenever they go from the clubhouse they used to and the guys that they used to talking all the time and to go into a different clubhouse where they know some of the guys, so they play with them in spring training and they hear of them, but you know, that's a team that's already bonded, you know, they already made the bond, they already connected. Now you got to step in, now you got to come in the clubhouse, get to know everybody, make sure you're doing the right things, make sure you're not you're not breaking the team in two teams. You know, you want to keep everybody bonded. You want to keep everybody connected because that's the chemistry. That's how teams win. So you know, that's probably the most challenging thing for any minor leaguer that comes in from a different clubhouse to a new clubhouse. Knowing my clubhouse already, knowing that I'm familiar with the AAA clubhouse, you know, it was comfortable for me to come in and just. Nothing challenging. It was good.
Francisco, I've already made inroads talking to Major League Baseball to rename it the Francisco Lindor Presents the Futures Game, just in case. Because, you know, if you're still in AAA, this could be a record fourth invite. Have you given any thought to, you know, officially sponsoring the Future Game or even just attending it?
Right. I mean, it's been on my mind. I told the guys a couple of times already. Like, I mean, I want to be in the big leagues. Hopefully, my goal is to be in the big leagues before then. If I'm not in the big leagues before then, then we'll see what happens then. We'll see what happens then. But I don't know. I think it's time for all the guys in the organization to go do it and represent the Indians just like I did. You know, because it's an honor and it's a blessing to be in that game and represent the Indians.
Is there anything you're trying to work on in particular right now, Francisco, that you think that would be the final step to get you ready for the big leagues? I mean, obviously, you need to, you know, the team need will play into that as well. But is there something you're working on? And how much did the Arizona Fall League help in the offseason, your experience there, to help better your game?
The Arizona Fall League, it helped me where, you know, guys that are being called up around, you know, they were there. And it was more game. It was more repetition for me. The more you play, the better you're gonna be. That's how I see it. And I was putting in the work, putting in the time to be a better player. And right now, you know, I'm just trying to be consistent. I'm trying to be very consistent in my game in every aspect of the game. I've been saying this since 2013, but every year, you got to be more consistent until you get good repeatedly. In the end, you're going to be great, you know? I want to be great. I'm working to be great, but I got to be good every single day in order to be great.
Francisco, we're delighted to have you this morning, and we thank you so much, and continued success to you, and it's just a matter of days till we see you in Cleveland, and maybe not again in the Futures game.
Hopefully not. Hopefully I'm off by then. If not, then, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm just going with the flow. I'm enjoying the ride.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time, Francisco. Continued success. Jonathan, closing thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think it was good that we had Francisco on, you know, on the heels of talking about guys who got called up, because obviously he's next in line. If you look at the production that Cleveland's gotten at a shortstop this year, I think if they feel that Francisco is ready to take over, they'll try to figure it out. And I do think it's a matter of when and not if. All kidding aside, I expect him to be in the big leagues well ahead of that Futures game. And, I think he and I guess what Jim, Corey Seager, who just got bumped up to AAA, is probably a guy that needs to be on that, you know, who's next kind of radar.
Yeah, and I'd throw in another shortstop, too. I know the Astros have said they're going to be patient with them, but, I mean, the Astros are you know, at least based on the way they're playing right now, definitely in contention. They lost Jed Lowry till probably after the All-Star break. You know, trying to get by with, you know, Marwin Gonzalez and Jonathan Villar. And, you know, Corey Seager, you know, before he got promoted, and Carlos Correa, who's still in Double-A, were just tearing up the Texas League. And I think we could see both those guys and Lindor all in the big leagues by mid-season. You know, I thought coming into the year, Jonathan, shortstop was the best prospect position in the minors. You know, Addison Russell was part of that group, too. And we may be looking a little harder than we thought for shortstops to play in the Futures game at this rate, because all the top guys are getting called to the big leagues.
J.P. Crawford better get a move on. He hasn't played yet this year because of an oblique strain for the Phillies. So he's next on that on the list of our top 10 shortstops after Correa, Lindor, Russell, and Seager, all of whom I think you're right, we're going to see in the big leagues at some point this year.
Jim and John, thanks so much for the great insights. And on behalf of Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening to the Pipeline Podcast.